Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, Bob, hello.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi, Bob. Howdy.
Howdy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. How about you?
I'm doing okay. We walked in here with a little technical difficulties, waving from that, but it's okay.
It's okay. You know what? Tech is not perfect, and neither are we.
Yes, of course. So, Count, before we get started, we need your weekend update.
Oh, Bob, you know, out there getting a suntan.
Hey, same as here. Yeah, exactly.
As vampires do, and I appreciate the Hawaiian shirt. Bob back in action today.
I was looking at the outfit options for the evening, and I was like, Count really likes it when I wear my Hawaiian shirts during the summer months, so I'll just make this a thing.
I think that you could have a whole clothing line.
Yes, spooky printed button-up shirts. I like that.
The summer solstice in full swing here, Bob.
Absolutely. This past weekend, I did my first travel out of state event since my surgery.
Okay.
I was in the Twin Cities.
The Twin Cities.
Yeah, I was up there for Twin City Pride. It was I was up there working. I was doing some freelance work up there, not Bob After Dark related. Yeah. And it was a pretty good time. Back. It was a long drive. It was a lot out of me traveling that far out. That was the farthest I've been since I've been sick. Luckily, I don't have anything that far out for a while because I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. Quick medical update from me. So I just got news today from the specialist. I told you guys last week when I was when we came back from the little bit of break we had from when I was doing my pre-op for my colonoscopy and my endoscopy. They did find 4 polyps in my colon. They have been removed. They have been tested. And as of today, they were benign, but precancerous. So what does that mean? I don't have colon cancer, but I am now officially at risk for it. So I have to go back every other year or every 3 years to go back in and get this wonderful procedure done every time. But that's one step in the right direction. Light at the end of the tunnel is they might have some medicine and some other stuff to take to get me at least comfortable. And starting this week, I have 2 more tests to take to find out what's going on with if it's my gallbladder acting up, which it's very much possible. But we're not there yet, so good news, no cancer. Like I can sit here and tell you guys that I don't have cancer today.
There you have it.
That's great news. Now, Count, it's not very often that we have a host in here, a co-host in here regularly. We're down to one these days, and that's when he's able to be in here. And normally it's the day of that I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And he's just like, oh, okay, nothing. And then we schedule him in. This was a predetermined motion, not from me, but from him himself. Wow. Sitting on my right is my best friend, my brother, Steve Michaels, professional wrestler, paranormal enthusiast, paranormal investigator, and pseudo-scientist.
I like that. I like how that sounds.
Yeah, we're gonna get. It's a long business card.
It's basically on a CVS receipt.
It's Jim Norman has been bugging me, our buddy Jim, about having his own business cards done up for the IT department at Bob After Dark, and I'm like, where are you gonna give that to? So, well, I'll make your own personalized business card, and where mine is just the host and executive producer, yours is this long line of titles. Oh, hey there.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
It's nice to see you, Steve.
It's good to be here, man. It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
It's been a minute since the nonsense of medical stuff has kept me away from pretty much anything. I have not seen you in a while. The last time I seen you, you didn't have this lovely accessory in front of us.
Yeah.
What is this that I'm looking at?
This is the Rocket Pro Wrestling Heavyweight title.
So this is your first time as a world heavyweight champion,
right? This is...
Because I remember you had it from...
This is my third heavyweight title.
So I remember the one in Orlando when you came up. Was that the world title, or is that their version of like the Intercontinental title?
That was the Pro Wrestling 2.0 heavyweight title.
Okay, yeah.
And then had the now defunct Berwyn Championship
Wrestling. I forgot that, but they're defunct now. But you're... you have something that's an ongoing.
Now I have over 100 days at this point.
Wow.
That
had Roman Reigns has nothing on you.
Four title defenses already.
Across the country.
In three different companies.
Yes.
So defended out in Hawaii at Oost Pro Wrestling. Defended at Ileana Pro Wrestling in Richardson Park. And then, of course, at Rocket Pro Wrestling.
That's wonderful. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, man.
Now, normally we would be talking about your travels. Yeah. But that would be a while since we haven't seen you in a minute.
Yeah.
But there's one thing in particular I want you to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping, you've told me a little bit about it before the show. And I'm
baseball.
Where you had a really cool stay somewhere, one of the most haunted locations in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping you'll talk a little bit about that on the air.
Yeah, absolutely. Had the pleasure of staying at on board the world famous Queen Mary for one night. It was only a one night stay, but it's an amazing ship, beautiful ship, haunted ship.
Yes, very much so too. It's up there as one of the most haunted locations in the world.
Yeah,
as I said.
Absolutely. It was. I was listed on the Smithsonian's top 10 most haunted locations in the world.
That's wonderful.
Which is crazy. Stayed in a. The cool thing about it is most of the ship is original. The decor, all of it, still original. You walk on and you just kind of step back in time.
Sure.
The ship was originally a Cunard Line ship, mm-hmm. which was the. I'm going to get nerdy here for a bit.
That's fine.
It was the direct competitor to White Star Line, which created the Titanic.
Yeah.
As the Titanic went to create, the White Star went to create the Olympic, Cunard went to create the Queen Mary, and then things started happening and people didn't want to travel as much on ships because of the Titanic,
of course.
And then eventually the British government came to Cunard, who was close to going out of business, and said, hey, we want you to partner with White Star. And they became the Cunard White Star Line.
Mm-hmm.
And they finished the Queen Mary. Queen Mary is actually larger by every metric than the Titanic.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
It is. It's longer. It's wider. It's higher. And faster. It held transatlantic speed record until the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah. So really cool. Really cool place.
That sounds like we're gonna have to do a future episode on it in the future.
We have to. Yeah. There's so many things to talk about. The got to tour the whole ship. Went into the boiler rooms, which was crazy, and just as creepy as you would expect it to be. Got to go into the pool area, the famous pool area on the ship.
Yeah, I know that's the thing.
And it was absolutely gorgeous. Fun fact about the pool. The shallow end was 6 feet. The deep end is 12 feet.
That's pretty amazing.
And it had a slide into it, into the deep end.
Now it's not a functional pool anymore, right?
No, it's been drained out.
Sure. But did you get to go inside the pool and like see yourself being like the concrete being taller than you or no?
No, but okay. I was on the deck area.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, being that it's still a lot of it being original, there's a lot of structural issues.
Oh, sure.
When it comes to that, so they only have certain section available for you to walk in, but you can look in and it's breathtaking.
Like
I've
amazing.
Been a lot of cool buildings and a lot of cool places. It's fantastic.
Now, I will save this for the future Queen Mary episode, which we'll discuss your schedule here in the near future,
yeah.
So we can have you on for that. Did you get any paranormal activity? And if the answer is no, we'll put a pin in it and come back to it. If it's yes, you could just say something weird, and then we'll move on.
Not this visit.
Okay, fair enough. We'll put a pin in it until the next episode. Now, Count, I think Steve has us trumped here.
Yeah.
As far as cool stories that have been going on.
All right.
Not even going to try.
So, Colin, have you ever stayed in a haunted boat?
Never stayed in a haunted boat, Bob.
So specific.
I don't know what would happen, though. If you can't really go anywhere if your boat is haunted.
That's true.
You're stuck out there.
You're surrounded by water, which, you know, that messes you up there too anyway, because you're
ghost.
They feed off of water and all that anyway, so.
Yes.
Have you ever been on a haunted boat, Bob?
No, can't say I have.
Steve Michaels has done something that the Bob of Bob After Dark hasn't done.
Yeah, you could legitimately say that you've also done Waverly. I've never been there.
That is true.
Yeah, I'll chalk that one up. I've never been to Waverly. And these days, I don't know if I want to go to Waverly because there's a lot of drama involved with going to Waverly.
Yeah.
So someday maybe, but I digress. If this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite movie involving a boat.
Oh, man. Titanic?
Yeah. Really? Not Ghost Boat starring, what's his name, Al Pacino?
Oh, yeah. How about Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump? Didn't
bubble it on did.
Yeah,
he,
yeah, I mean, he was on a boat briefly, but it wasn't like really. The whole movie wasn't based on a boat.
No, you're right about that.
What about
Deep Blue Sea?
Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Yeah, Jaws. I will count Jaws as a movie. There you go. My pick will be Speed 2.
It's a good movie, man. It's like Speed, but on water.
Yes, it's not my answer, by the way. My answer would definitely be Jaws. However. So we split Bob After Dark up into two parts. The first part is where we talk about the weird spooky news of the week. That's where me, the Bob, and you, the fans, go scouring the internet for the weird, the unusual, the creepy news, and anything that's, any kind of cryptid sightings, ghost stories, or even advances in science that borderline on science fiction.
You got there.
Yeah, I got there eventually. Count Panic's moving around, and it was distracting me. But so we dive into those weird spooky news of the week, and then I usually go to Count Panic and I get the hashtag Panic's take, where because I don't prepare him for any of the news stories, then he gives us his real raw take. I'm going to take a wild assumption that you do not have a news story.
You would be correct, sir.
I believe it. So we'll get to Steve's take, maybe. Because he doesn't come prepared.
I always have a
to
take.
To be fair, you did pick the lore of the week this week. I did. Yeah, I did not.
I did.
So,
I was amped about that.
So I will let you. I'll let you have that.
Okay.
So our first news story actually comes to us from futurism.com. This article is written by Victor Tangerman, and that is actually breaking news from today. NASA discovers strange spectral formations high over the Earth, and there's something going on in the Earth's ionosphere. Thank you. I knew you would do it. The ionosphere stretches about 50 to 400 miles above the planet, marks the boundary between our planet's atmosphere and outer space. While it houses most satellite orbits the Earth, it's vulnerable to changes in space weather, electromagnetic radiation emitted by the sun that can wreak havoc in the zone and mess with communications equipment. Under some conditions, the layer can be electrically charged. As detected by the global scale observations of Lemon Disc, or GOLD, imaging instrument, plasma bands stretching across the ionosphere can result in the formations of an unusual X and C shapes. It's a baffling and, I quote, alphabet soup, as NASA termed the findings in a news release this morning, which is when we're recording it, that could shed light on how space weather can influence our planet's upper atmosphere and interfere with radio and GPS signals. Charged particles can create dense bands or crests around the Earth's magnetic equator, while low-density pockets caused by the setting sun can result in low-density pockets called bubbles, according to NASA. Scientists believe that larger disturbances such as solar storms or even massive volcanic eruptions can cause multiple crests to emerge from an X shape, as previous GOLD observations have shown. But now scientists have spotted these same shapes without such occasion during what the scientists call quiet time. Earlier reports of emerging were only geomagnetically disturbed conditions. It is an unexpected feature during a geomagnetic quiet condition, said the University of Colorado researcher associate Fazul Laskar, who was a lead author on a paper on a discovery earlier this year in a NASA statement. Scientists are now wondering if something else could be causing these weird X shapes to appear. The X is odd because it implies that there are far more localized driving factors, said NASA scientist and the ionosphere expert Jeffrey Kleinzig. This is expected during these extreme events, but this seeing during the quiet time suggests that lower atmosphere activity is significantly driving the ionosphere structure. Apart from X shapes, some bubbles in the ionosphere can also curve into C shapes, which new observations show can appear in close proximity to each other. In short, there's still a lot to learn about our planet's magnetically charged protective shell. The fact that we have different shapes of bubbles this close together tells us that the dynamics of the atmosphere is more complex than we could ever have expected in the past, present, or future, Kleinzig said. The next one is from Channel 12 WBOY in Fairmount.
The old boy.
Yes. They are discussing the limited edition Mothman plush is now selling for $300 in some cases. I would have never in a million years thought I'd be doing a new story about Build-A-Bear, but here I am. So, West Virginia legend Mothman has hit mainstream yet again as stuffed toy from Build-A-Bear Workshop, but scalping and limited supply have dampened the release for some fans. The new Mothman plushie was a limited release as a part of the Build-A-Bear's Lovable Legends series, which has other cryptids in the past such as Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster. The toy proved to be extremely popular because just like the original story of Mothman, the stuffed toys were gone before many realized that they were there in the first place. The toy's release was online on last Thursday, June 27th, in the afternoon and sold out only an hour later, causing fans to voice their disappointments online. Scalpers have contributed to the shortage on some level. Listing and bids on the toy were posted on eBay literally the same day of release, ranging from $11 all the way up to $200 and more, 4 days after the release yesterday, so on July 1st. Listing for the Mothman were as high as $300 for the Mothman Build-A-Bear. However, if you missed the Mothman this time around, you might have a second chance at one in the future. President and CEO of Build-A-Bear Workshop, Sharon Price John, said the company received a remarkable response that a Mothman will eventually return at an, and I quote, future date, according to a statement sent to 12 News. In the meantime, Build-A-Bear recommends signing up for their email updates that will inform fans when toys are back in stock. If you want to know when the Mothman plush will be available again, you can sign up for updates on the Mothman store page. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, you know what? It's finally time where Build-A-Bear and Mothman, they all come together, and you can build your own Mothman. This could be a whole big deal. You know, we had the guest a few weeks back, you know, with the...
Yeah,
with
the, our friend D from Sorbet Jungle.
Yeah, so that was kind of ahead of its time right there. But that's a special item. This is just the Build-A-Bear, folks.
Yeah, no, this
not,
is...
Not knocking the Build-A-Bear.
No, it's a cute design, but let's get this hashtag Steve's take.
Are you getting a cut from this, Bob?
What?
Are you getting a cut from all the Mothman sales?
Why would I get a call? Oh, I'm not the Mothman, Steve.
I never seen you both in the same spot. That's all I'm saying.
It's like the walrus. Who is the walrus?
Oh, my God.
The walrus was Paul.
Can I get your take on this Mothman plush?
Look, I think it's adorable.
Yes, it's cute. It's got a t-shirt on that says the man, the moth, the legend, and it's a smiling Mothman with blue jeans and almost like black Converse shoes.
The likeness is uncanny.
Yeah.
But
I don't own a shirt that says the man, the moth, the legend, by the way. I don't own that.
Yet. I think it's cool. Look, I think it's cool that like what's essentially a children's company or it's seen as a children's company is doing something like this that's like promoting cryptids.
Yes.
Especially, you know, Mothman's kind of gotten bumped up the popularity level.
It's top three.
But, you know, still not everyone has heard of Mothman yet. So for them to be doing a, you know, a somewhat obscure cryptid is pretty neat.
Yes. It makes sense they did a Bigfoot one because Bigfoot's kind of engraved in pop culture.
Yeah. Everyone knows Bigfoot. Everyone knows Nessie.
Monster. Yeah. Mothman's popular. He's definitely the biggest the third biggest cryptid in the world, I would argue. It's interesting that Build-A-Bear did this one. I also am extremely surprised it sold out as fast as it did. Burning question on everybody's mind, did I get the Mothman Build-A-Bear? No, I didn't even know it was happening. I had someone reached out to me and they're like, hey, it's live. And I'm like, thanks, Build-A-Bear. I went on there and looked, sold out immediately. And I was like, well, now see, the question is, are scalpers buying them up and for the resale market? I'm sure, but I'm also positive that there's enough paranormal enthusiasts out there, especially cryptozoology fans, that bought this up because Mothman's turning into like almost a queer icon too. Like there's a lot of Mothman like queer like pride merch out there and stuff. So it's turning into its own icon in a lot of ways, which I think is wonderful. I'm all about it. And so people out there are a big fan of them. It's interesting that they chose Mothman because the story's a little on the darker side.
It's a very dark story, yeah.
Bigfoot has some scary elements, but at the end of
the day... No one's died related to Bigfoot.
Exactly. And I mean, Harry and the Hendersons, if you ask Count Panic, is an actual biopic.
That's a great movie. that's a great documentary.
It's a documentary, you see.
John Lithgow didn't die after that film.
No, so I mean, and Nessie, they're just this... bobbing head. Yeah, exactly. The Mothman is attributed to one of the most insane bridge collapses in American history. People died.
Right.
And people were tormented by this supposed entity for years in Point Pleasant before we have the on-surge of spike of them. Now, I don't know if I'm excited to say good job, Build-A-Bear, for kind of gentrifying Mothman, I guess, making it more popular. That's good for them, I guess. But in the same regard, it's like, now how do I make this good for me? You know what I mean? So I'm going to reach out to Build-A-Bear and see, like,
Build-A-Bob,
you know?
Look, anything that helps promote the paranormal, the cryptids, pseudosciences, all of those things, I think is a positive overall because it draws mainstream attention to these phenomenon, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you're getting mainstream news sources, writing articles, doing TV reports on Mothman.
Yes.
And that's pretty neat.
Yeah. 100%. It definitely brings an eye to things and it, you know, now I just, as a content creator that is always surfing through, you know, the trends of the internet now, I'm like, well, now Mothman's trending somewhere. And if Build-A-Bear is a massive company, it's not like this is a smaller toy company or an independent toy company.
No, they're in every mall where there still are malls.
Exactly. I was just at Mall of America this past weekend, and yes, they had a massive Build-A-Bear, and I walked by just in hopes that they had a Mothman. They did not.
It's right next to Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania.
It was not. Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania was not at Mall of America.
Sad.
Was that an actual store?
It was an actual restaurant that just served pasta.
I would have loved this.
In the early 90s called Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania. It was in the Mall of America food court.
Yes.
Yeah.
Today I learned.
Hogan invented pasta.
And now you know.
Hey, that's one of Hogan's lies, you know. All right. Anyway, that's a story for never. All right. So our last story, if I thought it was strange that I was covering Build-A-Bear, it's even stranger that I'm covering a news story from the Guinness Book of World Records.
I feel like that's less strange than a Build-A-Bear story.
Well,
Guinness is
and not the beer, Guinness World Records.
Yeah. Yes. Guinness Book of World Records has some weird stuff in it.
Yes.
Is it all true?
The Guinness Book of World Records is they have people that go out and judge these things. And it's.
Did you know how it got started, by the way?
Tell me, Steve.
You know what? So this is also true. The Guinness Book of Records was started by the Guinness Beer Company to solve bar bets.
No kidding.
It was. They created it to people were having bar bets and were like, oh, who's the world's tallest man? And then they would find that out and they would put it all in a book. And then they used to have them in pubs over in the UK. And they would just solve everything. And then it just grew to this huge thing. And Now it's all over. And now it's being talked about on Bive After Dark. So really, it's finally hit its peak.
And it's off of a strange story, but I'm going to count it because it's interesting. A record-breaking 63-leaf clover has been grown by a Japanese botanist. According to superstition, a 5-leaf clover brings even more luck to the finder than a 4-leaf clover, which I didn't even know there was any more leaves to a clover more than 4. I know 4 exists. I did not know that you can have a 5-leaf clover, let alone 63. But let me go back here. By this logic, the record-breaking 63-leaf clover grown by Yoshiharu Wanabe makes him the luckiest man alive. Yoshiharu, age 45, has been cross-pollinating clovers in his garden in his home at Nashobara, Japan, since 2012. He said, since the number of the leaves have increased year by year, I have been aiming for the Guinness Book of World Records title ever since. The previous record set by most leaves on a clover was set in 2009 by another Japanese botanist, Shigeo Owabara of Hanamaki City, who grew a 56-leaf clover. Yoshiharu has several clover patches dotted over his garden, and describing how he began developing them, he said, clover is a common plant found everywhere. So whenever I saw four-leafed, five-leafed, or seven-leaf clover near paddy fields or parks, I took it home. This plant is pretty strong, and you don't have to do anything to it, so I just left them alone, and they prospered. Until finding a 20-leaf clover in his garden after a few years, the possibility of achieving the world record was on his mind. I had to triple the number of the leaves in order to try it and beat it, he recalls. It didn't seem that easy, yet the leaves were growing in numbers, and I thought I might eventually be able to break it. From there, in addition to letting the clovers pollinate naturally in open air, he hand-pollinated the ones with the most leaves. By 2020, he grew one with 49 leaves. In 2021, he came extremely close with a 55-leaf one. But in 2024, he did it. Sometimes the numbers of leaves can go down, or sometimes you end up with a normal 3-leaf clover, he explains. We know that genetics are involved with a high number of leaves, yet we don't know exactly how it works. He estimated his now his record-breaking clover to have 56 leaves upon first noticing it, so he was pleasantly surprised to see it surpass 60 and when he counted them. He says he's very happy and to be finally entered as a world record, and I couldn't be happier for the guy. Outside the lore of bringing you good luck, this is interesting because, you know, it kind of covers both science and folklore at the same time. Hashtag panic steak.
You know, Bob, where does it end? Where does 4-leaf, 16-leaf, 20-leaf, 24-leaf, where does it end, Bob?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I think the luck goes up with depending on how many clovers you got on. There,
so. Look, if that's the case, I'm going after this guy. I could use some good luck.
As you should there, Bob.
Steve, what's your take?
Look, I mean, after like 7 leaves, like it all kind of becomes superfluous, doesn't it? I mean, like what's the point? What's the point after
the
like
deal?
10? Like
the guy has a hobby.
I mean, good for him. I have a hobby too, but like, it's...
Are you in the Guinness Book of World Records?
No, but I'm not.
Are
around...
you in the Guinness Book of World Records?
I'm
he's
not
a gardener. He likes gardening. He's
likes,
a botanist.
He has a lot of free time if he's sitting there and counting individual clover leaves.
Everybody has to have a hobby.
That's called cabbage. He grew a tiny cabbage.
It sounds like you're a hater.
No, no.
I think you're sipping on Haterade.
No. Who says that still?
I just did. You're slipping on that clove Haterade.
Wow. I wouldn't expect that from Mothman.
What? Do we have a caller?
We have somebody there.
I'm impressed. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, come on now, Bob. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve, is this guy using some performance-enhancing drugs on his clovers or what?
Oh, at first I thought you meant Bob.
I was like, John's calling me out for steroids.
He was up with steroids. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's
come on.
Those.
You know what? You hit the nail on the head. Who the heck is going to sit there clovers to be in a damn?
You guys are ridiculous. I'm proud of this, okay?
Thank you.
Steve, I'm glad you're kind of back tonight.
How can you back me up
so
here?
Much.
I feel like I'm getting ganged up on here.
I guess it's kind of cool.
Hey,
I don't know.
things were started off spooky when you guys didn't come on the air. I put on Jet TV. I'm hearing Chuck talk, and I thought it was. I even thought I got the wrong station. It's Monday morning when he's on at 6 a.m. I text the count. He didn't get back to me until 10 minutes later.
He's a knucklehead, I'll tell you that.
I was trying to figure out the problems around here.
Everyone except for me is on PEDs in this room. I don't.
I am not on performance. I mean, don't you think I'd be not on my sick problems I've been for the past like 4 months if I had?
Hey, man, you're killing it with this show. That's all
hey,
I'm
Bob,
saying.
Hey, Bob, I'm just playing with you. You know that. You know what? Hey, we're all believers, right? So, hey, I believe the guy. You know what?
He legitimately counted out every leaf, and he had to send in a picture.
It's kind of sad.
You can't take that. You know, it's been seen that, you know, something I made up and put in the Guinness World Book of Records. So, yeah, I'm just playing around. I believe you. But, yeah, you know what? And I just called. I just called to let you guys know to have a nice holiday.
Thanks, John. We appreciate you.
Always good.
I hope you have a good one, too.
Thank you. We'll see you guys.
Now, before we take our kind of commercial break.
Can I just say one last thing really quick? He could have spent his time growing his fingernails out. That's all I'm saying. Okay, continue.
Everybody has to have a hobby, and some people... I have had interesting hobbies in my life. I've done, like, pixel art with perler beads. I've made mead where I've had to sit there and count bubbles that pop up and time them to make sure that the mead is settling.
Are you in the Guinness Book of World Records?
I am not, but I'm also not trying. This guy had a goal. He had a dream, and he made it happen. And it just so happens that it's about clovers, which is about lore. That's why I'm covering the story. Okay. And I'm just getting hecked on by the lot of you.
No, look, man. Give it 2 years, America's going to take that title.
We won
it. USA.
Ireland. Ireland would be
Japan.
I know that, but I'm saying if there's a country that you would think would take over the clover leaf lore, it would be Ireland.
They're too busy drinking to care about counting.
That's really mean.
It's true. I have a lot of friends.
That's mean, and you know it. You want to take a break?
Sure.
I gotta reset myself. Folks, I know you just caught us live, but we've been here for over an hour trying to get the show going, so we'll be right back. To our live fans, don't go anywhere. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, you two.
Oh, hey there.
What did you two do during break? We'll start with Steve.
I tried growing a clover with 70 leaves. I got bored, and I just started playing video games.
That's okay. That's why you're not as good as that gentleman in Japan. Kyle Panic, wow. What'd you do during break?
Bob, while I was recording Steve doing that, trying to make sure it's good for the record book. But as Steve mentioned, he didn't get it done, so I did not report to Mr. Guinness or anything of that nature.
You know, I took up gardening as a hobby during break.
Wow.
You know, I was trying to grow the world's biggest Christmas tree.
Wow. Yeah. What is the record for that?
I don't know. But my goal...
It's probably in the book.
You know, I wasn't expecting you to ask me that. At least 20 feet.
Yeah. It is at least 20 feet. You are correct.
So my first tree is now at 21 feet and still growing.
Let me look this up. World's biggest Christmas tree.
I promise this is a paranormal show. We talk about ghosts and stuff, guys.
Sometimes we talk about Christmas trees. What about it?
We talked about the Mothman plush. I thought the cloverleaf story was interesting.
It was interesting.
You hated it.
It was interesting.
You're shaking your head. You're sitting right next to me.
No.
I see it.
How big was your tree,
it
Bob?
Was interesting.
What was that count?
How big was your tree?
21 feet.
This Oh, you didn't beat the record. 140 feet is
that's a big tree.
140 feet.
104. We got so some close. Time. We got some time.
You're off by.
We got some time, you know.
Yeah, who knew? I didn't.
All right, you guys want to dive into the lore of the week?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is what happens. You come on the show with the it's derailed.
We're live, pal.
I know we are. So, Kyle, let me take you back a couple days. I get a message from Steve saying, "What do you know about this?" And I look at my phone and I see a really like a case file, like a Photoshop case file of the Enfield Horror. I'm like, "Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's the Enfield Monster, Enfield Horror, not to be confused with the Enfield Poltergeist, which is actual lore, but not."
Yes.
Not anywhere near. It's on the other side of the world.
It's unrelated.
Unrelated on the other side of the world. I'll talk about that in the future if you guys are interested. But the Enfield Horror, and I was just like, oh, yeah, dude, I've never covered it on the show before. It's a cool story. It's local-ish in the fact that it takes place about 5 hours and 36 minutes away from here.
Yeah, so Southern Illinois.
Yep, so it's local to an extent. And it's a weird story. It's a terrifying story, realistically. And I was just like, you never bring things to my attention that are cryptid related. Usually it's all UFO based with you.
100%.
And so you brought a cryptid to me and I'm like, let's do it this week on the show. We've never covered it before. Mm. And I was like, take the lead. So I'm going to read you guys a little bit of this article here from the Cryptid Wiki. And then we'll dissect it. And then I have an interesting follow-up to the story from Skeptics.
Yeah.
All right. So the Enfield Horror. During the early 1970s, something horrible stalked the small town of Enfield, Illinois. Although Illinois is already home to such phenomena as strange lights, phantom black tigers, thunderbirds, and even stranger briefly haunted the people of this town. On April 25th, 1973... Henry McDaniel was among the first to encounter this terrible encounter that we now know as the Enfield Horror. At about 9:30 at night, McDaniel and his wife had returned home and they were greeted by their two children, Lil and Henry Jr. The kids proceeded to tell him a tale about how some, and I quote, thing had tried to get into their house by scratching on the door. Shortly thereafter, Henry was alerted to a peculiar scratching sound at his front door, and he expected to see a dog or a cat, but what he met with was far stranger and more horrifying. What Henry found, to his terror, was a creature that had three legs, a short body, two short arms, and two giant pink eyes as big as flashlights. It stood about 4.5 feet tall and was grayish-colored. And it was trying to get into the house. Henry was completely mortified by the sight of the horrible apparition, slammed the door, rushed to get his .22 pistol and a flashlight. Henry proceeded to fire on the creature 4 times, and according to him, when I fired that first shot, I know I hit. The beast hissed at him, and most sources say that it sounded like a wildcat, and proceeded to bound away in long leaps across his yard, eventually becoming lost to McDaniel's sight as it made its way towards the railroad and at the cover of trees. He asserted that he'd never seen the thing cover 50 feet in only 3 leaps. Stunned by the encounter, Henry proceeded to call the police. Upon investigation, the state troopers discovered a series of scratches in the side of the house and footprints that were very similar to a dog's, but having 6 toes instead of 4. 2 of the tracks were 4 inches wide, while the print on the left and by the 3rd foot was much smaller. Many on the police force were skeptical about what McDaniel had seen, despite having received news of an attack on a small boy just 30 minutes earlier. The creature had ripped at the child's clothes with its claws on its arms, while the talons on the toes had shredded the kid's shoes. However, the police couldn't find any trace of the entity, so things cooled down for the moment. However, May 6th, at 3 o'clock in the morning, the witching hour at that, Henry encountered the creature again after having been roused from his sleep by a commotion from his neighbor's dogs. Once again, he saw the creature loitering about near the tree trunks, and this went on for several minutes, until the entity casually bounced away into the night. McDaniel said, "I saw something moving out on the railroad track, and there it stood. I didn't shoot at it this time. It just started down the track, and it wasn't in a hurry or nothing." And thereafter, the word of the Enfield Horror had gotten around and people began to flock to the small town in hopes of seeing this thing. They were enthusiastic, but they were also very intrusive. This promoted the local sheriff, Roy Posher Jr., to warn McDaniel about keeping his mouth closed, or he would be forced to incarcerate McDaniel. Over the next few months, the crowds began to grow larger, and with the larger crowds come increased alarm among citizens of Enfield. I need to point this out real quick, guys. If you look at Enfield on a map, it is a tiny rural town.
It is.
There's not much going on there. So when you bring in a giant flock of people, so, you know, you got to think in the 70s, news didn't travel anywhere near as fast as it did. So the fact that people got word that this was going on is extremely impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing news interviews up here on WGN in Chicago, and had news articles in the Chicago Daily News, and the Moline Dispatch. The Alton Telegraph, the Champaign Urbana Courier, like all of these places were doing articles on him and drawing a lot of attention to this.
Yep. So among these people were genuine monster hunters, while others were just hunters of the thrill seeking with guns. This forced the sheriff's hand, and particularly when he had to arrest five gunning toting hunters for shooting at a gray thing that ran through the woods. Two of the hunters, Mike Mogul and Roger Tappy, both from Elwood, Indiana, both swore that they had witnessed a gray monkey quickly move through the underbrush. Sheriff Poshard made numerous threats against Henry McDaniel, which, it should be noticed, had no effect whatsoever, who was convinced that there was something very strange going on. Shortly thereafter, once the frenzy of hunters and tourists died down, four more people saw the Enfield Horror. The next one I want to talk about is the Rick Rainbow encounter.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, May 6th, which was not much longer after the last McDaniel incident, Rick Rainbow, the then director of the radio station in WKKI in Kokomo, Indiana, was searching an area with three friends when they saw something that was around 5.5 feet in height, gray, and stood over running through the woods near an abandoned house, which is reported was nearby McDaniel's home, and the entity moved with unnatural speed and quickly vanished from the four men's sight. However, Rick Rainbow claimed to have recorded the creature's eerie shriek as it ran away from them on a tape recorder. Despite the investigation by world-renowned cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who has said to have heard the creature's cries, the attention that the sightings received eventually died down. The creature hasn't been seen since. Lauren told the press, "I traveled to Enfield, interviewed witnesses, looked at the sighting of the house the Enfield monster had damaged, heard some strange screeching banshee-like sounds, and walked away bewildered." There's another thing going on.
So,
you go on.
So before we get to that,
yeah,
let's talk a little bit about some of the potential possibilities of what this could be.
Yes.
And then we can backtrack to this.
Yes.
'Cause there were people that were suggesting, oh, because of how it moved and the three legs, maybe it was a kangaroo that escaped from a zoo. To which Mr. McDaniel vehemently denied. He was a Vietnam veteran.
Yep.
And was in the military long before then.
Yes.
And as a part of his military tour, he had spent time in Australia. And he was very familiar with what a kangaroo looked like and how a kangaroo moved. And he said it wasn't a kangaroo. People also suggested that it was very specifically an anthropology student was quoted in the United Press International, suggesting that the creature may have been a wild ape.
Yes.
Because those animals, wild apes, had been reported throughout the Mississippi Valley area since 1941. That being said, let's jump back in time now.
Yeah.
And talk about this case. In Mount Vernon.
Yes.
Which is... it's less than 40 minutes away from Enfield.
Yeah. So between the years of 1941 and 1942, there was a string of similar sightings in the small village of Mount Vernon, which is ironically less than 40 miles away from Enfield. These encounters involved a mysterious leaping beast that terrorized the local people and is supposedly responsible for numerous animal deaths and mutilations in the region. The locals called this creature the Mount Vernon Monster and described it being vaguely baboon-like in appearance and able to leap anywhere from 20 to 40 feet in a single bound. However, this creature is likened more to be a devil monkey than the Enfield Monster, but it is possibly that it was, in fact, the same creature. We talked about devil monkeys on the show before, of it being a strange creature that kind of lurked right around that neck of the woods. Right. That's about, how long ago did we the episode about the devil monkeys? Was that about 2 or 3 months back?
I'd say about,
yeah. So the devil monkey case, you guys could go back and check that out. I have an episode about it because that was a strange tale of going around it. But there's no stories of the devil monkey being that, not sentient, but intelligent.
Right.
The devil monkey tales are more or less like this, these angry ape-like creatures.
Monkeys.
And they're attacking based on instinct versus attacking based on intelligence.
Right.
The Enfield horror case, this thing was scratching at the door to get these people's attention.
Yes.
And it survived a point blank shot with a .22.
Yes.
Now,
again,
military veteran, exactly.
Vietnam War veteran, experience.
Yes.
That man's got a good shot on him.
Of course, and
especially if you're defending your family,
you're going to have
the best shot.
Exactly. A .22 isn't a small caliber firearm. It's a decent size caliber. You are standing. Let's say I'm looking to actually injure whatever's trying to break into my house. We're going to use the word cryptid here because I don't need people thinking I'm a crazy person, but I'm going to try to be as close as possible to the target so I know I can take it down.
Right.
So let's say that he has the same instinct I do and he was shooting from, let's say he received the firearm and he shot through the door, which is a part of the story I wasn't able to find in my research. If he shot through the door, or did he open the door and shoot it? Because that's two different things. Did you find that?
I did not find specifics. My assumption is that if he was able to see it, it was either opened or a screen.
Right. I'm going with that he judged the size of it, slammed the door, it was still there. He knew the size from looking at it. He's a military veteran. He's combat trained. Probably realized, okay, my target's about 4 feet off the ground. I'm going to aim for about 3.5 with the kick.
Right. And a lot of these houses that time, they do have that front screen door. So
yes.
He may have just had that screen door and just had the full door open at that point still.
Yep.
Just to get a little bit of distance.
Absolutely.
But that's speculation.
No, of course. I don't have exact answers on that. What I find fascinating is the Mount Vernon Monster case. And people saying it was leaping across great bounds, across tree limbs. And they said it might have been an ape-like creature.
Right.
And you wonder, because you look at Sasquatch encounters, especially around the Midwest, you don't have them moving at super speeds.
No.
No, most Sasquatch are
very plodding.
Yep, and they moved with instinct, and they move with a reason.
Right.
This was a wild, I'm leaping 50 yards in 3 feet. That's not 50 feet, not 50 yards. I'm leaping 50 feet in 3 leaps away from a gunshot. I mean, that's survival instinct kicking
right.
in.
I've never heard of a Bigfoot jumping.
No, not 50 feet. I've heard it lobbing trees 50 feet,
right.
but not jumping. So I'm going to eliminate any sort of Bigfoot thing here.
100%.
People
suggested that it might be some kind of a wildcat. Because of the jumping distance and wildcats can. However, the way this sounds is that it was upright.
Yep.
And in order to scratch at a window, you gotta be upright.
And I can't say it's a bipedal. It'd be like a tripedal creature, if that's
right.
even a term.
Right.
And it was intelligent in the way that it came back.
Right.
It frightened the kids.
Right.
McDaniel comes back home. Waits and it comes back again.
Right.
Animals don't do that.
Like, generally speaking,
no.
They don't.
I mean, like, if there is a reason it would come back to back, that is so strange. If it's like, let's say, a bobcat, for example, right. Or you know,
unless it's sick, unless it has some kind of disease,
sure,
then it might. But you know, the general description. Again, this is a man who is. If he's familiar with what a kangaroo looks like, he knows what a bobcat looks like. He knows what a wildcat looks like. I feel like he wouldn't make that kind of mistake and say, oh, this is some kind of weird creature when it's clearly an animal he's seen before.
The kangaroo is an interesting theory because I know for a fact that there were kangaroo sightings in Springfield, Illinois, from 1970s through the 1980s, and I know that because yes. Jack Chavez reported on it and actually reached out to witnesses from it, and there was an actual kangaroo that escaped a zoo and populated enough, whatever, came back, populated, and there was a couple kangaroo running around the area.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen a wild kangaroo videos from Australia,
yeah.
But they are terrifying, and they're very... Those things, I could believe would be like tapping on the glass and whatnot with its claws. But McDaniel's been around them. He served time in Australia.
Yes.
I always wonder when people come to me, and especially, you know, on a skeptical side, and I'm talking hardcore, like, I'm not going to believe this at all.
100%.
I always got to put in the question why somebody would make this story up. What do you gain? McDaniel wasn't like some sort of businessman being like, well, my air conditioner saved my life because it's a right. McDaniel air conditioning unit. I just, you know, that's the
He didn't have any business that would have gained any kind
exactly. of. Exactly. And why would you want to draw purposely attention like that to your small community?
Or more importantly, why would you want to draw attention like that to your family?
Exactly. If there wasn't a reason to do it.
Right.
He had a story. He was legitimately frightened about what he saw. And he wanted somebody to believe him. And it's not like he gains anything from lying about this. Now, yeah, I guess you could lie for the sake of lying, but it's a military veteran, a decorated one at that.
Right.
He's trying to have somebody listen to him.
And I'll say this. I have friends whose parents are Vietnam veterans.
Yep.
They are very no-nonsense when it comes to that kind of stuff. If they're telling you something like that, they mean it because it's their credibility.
Yep. And the fact of the matter is I can eliminate the kangaroo or a wildcat based on description alone. This man is, I'm going back to the military training here, but this guy is a trained military combat veteran. His job, his number one priority in the military is being able to recognize a target and being able to react in a fast situation.
Recognize
which
a threat, yeah.
What he describes is not a kangaroo. Kangaroos aren't gray at 4 feet tall, you know what I mean?
Let alone have glowing
pink eyes. That is such a specific color. Because if you say red, you say, you know, whatever, yellow, right. Then I'm going to be like, okay.
But it could be reflections.
Exactly.
Or whatever,
but yeah. You said pink. That's an interesting like thing in and of itself.
Yeah.
And the fact that it came back and it's like, hi, I'm not lying to you now that this thing came back. And
they had the physical evidence too.
Yes.
They saw the scratch marks. They saw that there was physical damage.
Yep.
Like, you know, it's one thing if you're saying, you know, hey, I'm seeing this creature. It was right here at the house, but then there's nothing.
Right.
There was physical damage.
Yes.
And
if this thing was angry, it couldn't get in.
Right.
You know, a wild animal is not going to just attack your house because it's angry. You know,
it's not going to hit and then run.
Exactly. And that's what this thing did. It was leaving a message that it was angry. And the fact that this time he didn't shoot at it and it was just kind of going about its business. I don't know. I don't see why McDaniel would do this if he was lying. It doesn't right. make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. That's what makes it so fascinating.
What I would be interested to know is if any of the neighbors reported on it around the same time. But they did with the story of the little boy that got attacked earlier that day. Yep. If McDaniel was lying about that, are you going to say that the little boy that was attacked by the same thing, same description,
right,
are you saying that little boy and him collaborated? Because I don't, in any of my research, I never came across any story saying that this was relation. Right. And why would McDaniel pick this random kid out and be like, hey, can you say that you got attacked by something?
Right.
And while you're at it, can you tear up your shoes? Because back then, shoes are a commodity, man. It's not like you're right. going to go destroy something that not a lot of people are going to afford brand new ones of.
Right.
You know, and I'm not talking down about the Enfield community, but it's not a poppin' city like Chicago anything.
Look, I've spent time down in that area, that general area, and it's, you know, it's not an affluent area. It's very rural.
Yeah,
it's a farm community that's down there. A lot of people living very basic, simple lives.
Yep.
And you know, you don't make that stuff up.
No, and the point is, I don't like the fact that. Because I have a story here brought up from sociologists that claim that he's lying. And I'll get to that in a moment. It blows my mind that that the sheriff was so angry that he wanted to arrest him. Why would you arrest somebody that's making claims like that? On what grounds can you arrest him? Inciting a riot? It's not the same thing.
Right.
You can't stop somebody from telling something on the news. And that makes me wonder if the sheriff knew more than what he was letting out.
I feel like that's more of small town closing ranks.
Sure.
Than anything. I feels more like, hey, you're drawing too much attention. You need to shut up. As opposed to, oh yeah, we know what this is. You know.
That's fair. I just, it's a wonder to me if the sheriff knew more than what he let on. Which it's possible,
that's fair. Yeah,
it's not.
There's no way of knowing.
No, exactly. You know, I look at the story. You remember a couple months ago we talked about the Snallygaster?
Yeah.
And how Teddy Roosevelt said that he was going to go hunt one down because he believed it existed, and the feds went and shut up all of the people in that area when one got shot down in the distillery plant of where they were, you know, growing it. And they're like, well, if you come forward, you know, we're going to shut you down regardless. So you look at cases like the Snallygaster, and it was got so big that Teddy Roosevelt was going to go hunt this thing himself.
Right.
You're not going to, and I'm not, this isn't a conspiracy theory podcast, guys. Don't think I'm going all government knows more than what they know, because they do, but I don't need to argue that statement here on the show. That's not what you're watching it for or listening to it for. It's not hard for the federal government to call up a sheriff's office and be like, yeah, hey, man, you need to shut that up because, you know, fill in the blank. It's a threat to national security about, you know, well, you could make up whatever story you want. I 1,000% believe what McDaniel said that night that happened. And what brings more precedence to it was the Victor Rainbow story.
Yes.
The Rainbow Rick, I'm sorry. The Rick Rainbow story, not Victor. The Rick Rainbow story, he went out there to catch audio of the thing and caught it. And then the famed cryptozoologist, Lauren, went out there. I've read that dude's work before. He knows what he's talking about. And the fact that he's like, I went there and I was bewildered. Lauren Coleman is known to shut things down and say, no, this is not real.
Right.
And the fact that he went there and he saw the gouges in the house and he heard the screams, he's like, no, there's something going on here. Now, I can't talk of why there's never been a sighting since. Again,
that's what's so fascinating about this to me, is that, you know, you have something like this that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
And then it just disappears.
There's nothing saying that one of those people that went out there hunting the thing didn't actually succeed.
Right.
And that's, I've talked to people, and we'll just leave it at that, that do this kind of a thing. And no, you know, if they bagged it, they're not going to come forward because they don't want to end up gone.
Right.
Catch my drift.
Right.
So it's possible that someone might have killed this thing, or it moved on somewhere else and just knows better not to screw with the bipedal weird human things.
Right. Yeah. And that's very possible.
Now, I have a story here from Fox 2. This was published actually last year in 2023 by Liz Dowell, and this is Fox 2 now, and it talks about a little bit of the Enfield monster. But they talk about the concept of the consequences of groupthink and mob mentality. So, in 1978, David L. Miller, Kenneth J. Midas, and Richard A. Mathers of Western University wrote an essay about the Enfield monster for Sociological Quarterly, a critical examination of the social cognition image of the collective behavior, the case of the Enfield monster, the article is titled. They discuss groupthink and how mob mentality can cause individuals to believe the same hallucination in a report. Which I believe.
Right.
This is clear because five people were caught in the woods looking for the Enfield monster. On May 9th, 1973, the Enfield Courier and Press published a story in which White County Sheriff Roy Posher Jr. described why these guys were detained. Those kids were out there shooting at anything that moved, he said, making no attempt to disguise either his anger or impatience. Ever since this creature business has gotten started, we've had people milling around here with guns and drinking. And if I don't put a stop to it, somebody's going to get killed, which I agree with.
Yeah.
In this report, he goes on to explain why parents are terrified to send their children out at night. People around here are afraid to let their kids go out, not because of the monster, but it's because they're afraid their kids will get shot. There isn't any monster, said Poshard. So the idea is that the mob mentality make the story a little bit more fantastical. Sure, I'm 100% right behind these people writing this article, the writing the paper for it. Yeah, mass hysteria is a thing that happens
always.
I go back and it's funny, it's a ha-ha joke, but it's the same case with like the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a silly meme, it's funny, I laugh about it. It's the Bob After Dark arts villain.
It's a good case study,
but
though,
it really is
of the mob mentality.
Tons of people flocked to Mobile, Alabama to try to capture this leprechaun,
right?
And to the point where people were selling merchandise and leprechaun hunting traps and this and that. Same concept. Was the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun real? I like to believe so, but that's more of a joke. This is a credible, what I would believe is a credible source talking about something that terrorized his family not once but twice,
right?
And it attacked a little boy the same day earlier, and they couldn't capture what it was.
Yeah.
Whatever that thing was, I believe was there. I couldn't tell you what it is. The hopeful believer in me, because I'm not one of the overzealous believers, you know that. I'm a believer, but I'm not an overzealous believer.
Right.
I would like to say that maybe it's some weird animal kangaroo-like thing, but I can't go back to the kangaroo because kangaroos ain't got pink eyes. They're not gray, blobby things.
Right.
McDaniel worked in Australia with the military. He's seen wild kangaroos in their natural environment.
And it also has qualities of swamp ape.
Right, of course.
You know, of the old skunk ape kind of stories. And those are smaller, for those that aren't familiar, they're smaller Bigfoot type creatures.
The skunk ape in Florida, Everglades, yeah.
And they're a little bit more agile.
Yeah.
You know, it shows some qualities of that as well. Like it's such a hybrid amalgam of multiple different kinds of cryptids that we're familiar with, but like it's not anything that you can put your finger on.
Six toes, Steve. That's the other thing I want to bring up in this case, is the fact that the print, one print had six toes, one print was a smaller handprint. Kangaroo tails don't leave handprints, bro. Right. They leave tail imprints.
And kangaroos don't, by their very nature, you can't get them down.
No, they're a bipedal creature for a reason. Their hands are like this, but they're giantly clawed.
The only possibility would be is if it had a joey with it.
Yeah.
In pouch. But even then,
why would a wild kangaroo bring its young to some random house?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Why would McDaniel lie about something that tried to attack his own children? And I get it that people are cruel and whatnot, but it went after them in its This is why I draw to that hyper-intelligence aspect to this. It knew what it was doing.
Right.
And it thought if it came back, the parents wouldn't be there. Maybe it scouted and it said, oh, I have more prey to do, whatever, murder, right. eat, etc. I don't think it was expecting McDaniel to have a gun.
No.
And the fact that he shot it, it hissed or growled or moaned or whatever, and then it came back.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah.
What? You shoot something with a 22.
That's what makes it so terrifying.
Exactly.
Is you it shoot, just keeps coming back.
You shoot something with a 22, that is not going to just... a human might be okay. A deer might be okay for a little bit after a shot, especially if it just grazed something. But he shot to kill, and he fired it several times. He said, I know I hit it once.
Right. And even then, you know...
It's, how are you going to walk away from that?
And when they return... seem virtually unscathed.
Yeah.
Like, that's fascinating.
What out there is just going to heal from a gunshot wound naturally if it does, in the very least, if it's not hyper-intelligent?
Right.
You know what I mean? Let's say I don't believe that it's a cryptid. There's some kind of monster that was in Enfield that night.
Right.
How many kangaroos do you know, or wildcats do you know, that are hyper-intelligent that can treat its own gunshot wound?
Right.
You know, you got to address a gunshot wound. You have to, you know, dress it and stitch it and make sure you're not bleeding.
Right.
Certain animals die by bear, you know, by just normal traps.
Well, and you know, in that very vein, you know, everything that I read up and researched, there was no blood trails.
No.
There were no reports of any kind of blood trails that they could follow off into the woods, which means when it got shot, it didn't have any effect.
Right.
And I don't know any animal, living or extinct, that if you shoot it point blank, it's not going to bleed.
You know who's been quiet through all of this?
Kangaroos?
Is that your theory? I was about to be like, you know, Cop Panic's been quiet.
Just in general, kangaroos are, you shouldn't mess with them. We see the videos of the folks fighting with kangaroos, and kangaroos always seem to win. So just on that fact alone, I would never mess with the kangaroo. Here in the U.S., I don't think we have many kangaroo sightings.
Good talk.
Right?
I suppose, yeah.
I mean, when's the last time you saw one around here?
Yeah, I mean, there's not any real, at least currently, any populations of significance
of wild kangaroos. No, yeah. On the Missouri-Illinois border.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be out there, but we just don't
know. So what do you think, Count? You think he's making it up and nothing was actually there?
I think it might be a bunch of...
Hooey?
Hooey, yeah.
Oh!
That's hooey. What I was searching for.
Hooey. Do you think the story's hooey?
I think it might be hooey, Bob.
Well, how do you explain the kid earlier in the day that got attacked?
Listen, don't come up with theories.
I'm asking your opinion.
I'm not sure about that one, Bob. I guess that is a conundrum in it all, but I don't know. It just seems like it's just a little sketchy, a little bit of a hooey, if you ask me.
What about you?
I don't think it's hooey, but I don't. This is why I brought this up to you.
Yeah.
It's because it's such a bizarre case.
Yeah.
And you can backtrack to the early 40s with what happened in Mount Vernon.
Yep.
And then you can look at the very brief follow-up issues that happened with it. And I don't know. I don't know what this could have been. I don't know where it could have gone. I don't know where it could have come from.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many, you know, there's so many unanswered questions with all of this that I think this, when you talk about a cryptid, I think this really is kind of a true cryptid.
Yeah.
Where there's zero answers to anything about this.
Yep.
And I feel like this will be one of those cases that will never be solved and will just kind of go down in history as a bizarre case study.
Do you think something was there that night?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the fact that...
Who's going to damage their own house? Even if right. you're saying that's going to lie. Let's say that you made up the entire story. Who's going to go outside and gouge in your own home?
Right. And for the police to note it in their reports.
Yep.
That, okay, yeah, there is these gouges and scratches and whatever. You know, that lens... Now, you know, we always talk about the levels of believability when it comes to a case.
Right.
When you're researching a case.
Of course.
And you have a very credible witness.
Yep.
Military, police, those are always the best witnesses.
Right.
You know, so you've got a military veteran, combat hardened veteran witness. You have physical evidence of footprints. You have physical evidence of damage. And you have that in police reports.
Yeah.
So now those are in actual files. Like, this is everything that you could do to show and that this actually happened.
Yep.
But the cause is just will probably forever be unknown.
It left a six-figure print behind. That's the strangest bit to me.
Yeah.
If McDaniel went out there and faked the prints that the police reported on, what made him think to do six?
Right.
Why not three or four, like normal kind of creatures would leave behind, or even five?
Right.
You know, some of the Bigfoot fakings that have come out over the years have been, oh, we went out there with fake,
yeah,
five printed, five toed things. Right. You know, arches might have been off, but whatever. Six.
Yeah, it's a weird detail.
And there were three prints left behind.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know, man. I have nothing to add to that other than I legitimately believe that there was something there. Do I think that the general public hyped this thing up? Oh, yeah, 100%. I think what he saw, what attacked that kid earlier that day and what happened to Rick Rainbow, I think all that stuff's true. But do I think all these drunk people that went out there and started shooting in the woods, they were definitely causing a scene. I'll give every skeptic that 100%. That's why I always tell people, you know, when it comes to paranormal stuff, if you're going to go investigate, go when it's, you know, there's a tourist reason for it, Mothman Festival, et cetera, et cetera. Go book a ghost tour with an actual credited company. When you're going out and investigating yourself, like, you're going to have enthusiasts that go and do it anyway, myself included, but you got to be respectful of the area around you, man. People, like, whenever I go out to Bray Road, people live on Bray Road.
Right.
They're, like, live there now, people live on Bray Road. Yeah. They don't want to be bothered. So you got to be careful when you do that kind of a thing. Count, where are you at with the story? You still think it's hooey?
I still think it's hooey, Bob.
But do you have any closing words for the audience?
Oh, well, geez, you're jumping right into that.
Well, I'm just curious if you have any closing advice for the audience.
Closing advice, well, as we film this right here live, everybody have a safe 4th of July. If you're listening to the podcast, hopefully you had a safe 4th of July. Be careful with fireworks, folks, because
that is a dangerous thing.
They are dangerous. So please do not operate fireworks if you're under the influence or if you don't know how. Or, you know, the best bet, Bob, go to somebody else's fireworks show and don't light them up yourself.
That's a fair assessment. Let me see if I still have it. Still have it. Mm-hmm. Hi, folks. This is Steve Michaels here. You can follow me on social media at Chicago Bear Hug on X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or Threads. You can follow me at Chicago Bear Hug. Make sure you guys go and buy my merch, prowrestlingtees.com/Chicago Bear Hug. Use BAD10 at your discount for Bob After Dark. You get 10% off on your order.
Don't do that.
I don't know your schedule for wrestling, though, over like the end of July and August.
Yeah, I
that I can't do.
So, you know, I've got a couple weeks off here.
Hey! Nice.
I got a couple weeks off, so I get to enjoy some time at home. My next big match will be down in Florida. It'll be in Sanford, Florida. The forever thorn in my side, Mikey Spandex.
Always Mikey Spandex.
It is always Mikey Spandex. Against my wishes, I want to say, has put me into an anything goes match. I didn't agree to be in this match.
Uh-huh.
He went to the powers that be at uh-huh. the company, the wrestling lawyers, and put me in this match.
That dastardly Mikey Spandex.
Yeah, Mikey Spandex. It's always he's the Joker to my Batman.
He probably smells funny too.
He reeks. He is a gross human being.
Mikey Spandex, if you're listening to this episode, you got beef with me, buddy.
Yeah, but look, I'm gonna end Mikey once and for all.
Are you gonna hit him with cheese grater?
I'm gonna hit him with a lot of things.
That's fair.
Someone will bleed.
That's good to know.
Someone will bleed. That's a promise. But yeah, that's my next big match.
Sounds good. Well, folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. And I just want to wish all of you sweet dreams to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world. I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night to my mother and dad, wherever you are in the universe. I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.